Get yourself a song to sing and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. They brought death to our hometown.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is Dr. Jack Rasmus, your host for Alternative Visions, the show where we try to discuss solutions and answers to the economic political crisis in the United States and abroad, not just discuss the dimensions of the problem. Okay. Today, we're going to focus heavily on the solution side. I have two guests here today, longtime trade union officers and activists, Jerry Gordon, Alan Benjamin. I will introduce them properly shortly. The topic is going to be the Labor Fight Back Network and Conference that was recently held. I think you'll find this quite an interesting show, folks. Okay, I typically give an update on the deficit cutting status in the United States, a.k.a. austerity American style. But I'm going to forego that at the beginning of this particular show. We're going to take that up again in depth next week. I'm going to discuss line by line, paragraph by paragraph, an analysis of Obama's April announced 2014 budget, which will take effect next October. I'm going to focus specifically on Social Security, Medicare, taxes, defense spending, and you're going to get a little bit of an education as to what's really in that budget and what its significance truly is, pointing the way, as I will argue, to a new deficit deal coming at the end of this year or in second half of this year. Both parties no longer engage in a grand bargain, but a grand collusion. And they're all waiting on the massive tax code changes working their way through the House of Representatives, the Campbell Committee, i.e. the T-Publicans, big tax code changes, which will bring big tax cuts to corporations. Okay, and that's when they're going to do their real wheeling and dealing with Social Security, Medicare, and so forth. We'll talk about that next week. And you can also read it in a long 8,000-word article I've recently written, which will appear in Against the Current magazine soon, called Austerity, American Style, From Grand Bargain to Grand Collusion. All right, we'll talk about that next week. Also, look for my similar article, long article, coming out in Z Magazine this July, which is predicting the U.S. and global economy. You read the papers today, oh, big housing boost going on. Housing prices rising, right? Oh, they're almost halfway recovered to all the price drop in housing that occurred in 2007, 2008, and 2009. And this is a big recovery. Well, we'll talk about housing. Is there really recovery? How long will it last? What's driving it? And we'll talk about the rest of the U.S. economy, which is heading south along with the rest of the global economy. Anyway, we'll talk about that, and you should take a look at that, predicting the U.S. and global economy, if you're interested. I will post it on my website, kikulosproductions.com, and also my blog, jackrasmus.com, and here on the Progressive Radio Network when the articles appear in print. Okay, my guests. Jerry Gordon, longtime union representative, with a long history in the mainstream of the progressive labor trade union movement, UFCW, other unions, too many. I'm not even going to list them all, Jerry. His credentials are quite impressive. Also, Alan Benjamin, who is a member of OPEIU, Office of Professional Employees, Delegate San Francisco Labor Council, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just going to jump to the chase here. I will post their bios when we archive this show. And if you want to look at their credentials a little more, you can at that time. Jerry, Alan, are you on?
This is Jerry, and I am on, and thank you, Jack, for having me.
Okay, Alan, are you there? Nope, Alan's not on yet. Okay, Jerry, just you and I. We will go until and such time as Alan does appear, if he does. Anyway, we want to talk about, Jerry, the recent conference that was held in Rutgers University called Labor Fight Back and the attempt to, or plans to, form a network of union activists across the country, nationwide, a Labor Fight Back network. Let's start with the conference and that network idea, Jerry. Can you fill us in on the conference itself that was recently held at Rutgers University? Who attended, and what the discussions were, and what the conclusions were, et cetera.
Yes, Jack. Let me start off by saying that this conference was held against the backdrop of some horrific problems that confront the labor movement and its community allies. Let me just list the main ones. We have the jobs crisis, the stagnant economy. We know that the new jobs that are heralded and trumpeted are mostly part-time jobs, temporary jobs, low-paying jobs, low-benefit jobs. So the economy is not going forward despite the claims to the contrary. It's going backward. The sequestration, which is in effect, is calculated to cost 750,000 jobs just this calendar year. We know that on May 24th, 115,000 IRS, Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Housing and Urban Development, and others were furloughed. Those employees were furloughed, unpaid leave, for one day. That was about 5% of the total workforce, and we know what that means. It means hardship. For large numbers of people, and the deterioration of public services. Social Security disability claims are backed up. It takes nearly years to get your case heard and decided. So that's the jobs issue. That really is the big issue. Secondly is the record with strikes over the past period. We've seen the big companies, Boeing, Caterpillar, Verizon, strikes there by strong unions, and yet the strikes were not won, and there were setbacks and concessions given so that defined pensions, which is guaranteed pensions, becoming really a relic of the past as workers are forced into 401k, and their pensions depend on how the stock market fares. The one departure from this very positive development was the Chicago teachers, which have set an example for the labor movement as to how to conduct a strike involving unifying the workers, 30,000-member union, having large meetings, membership, democracy, community ties with parents. So that's a breath of fresh air, but that's contrary to the more general trend. I won't detail all the rest except just sort of to mention them. But I do want to point to what happened in Wisconsin, where labor suffered a drastic defeat, and it lost bargaining rights for public employees. It was a disaster, and it shows the teeth of the corporate world, and they went on to get right to work in Michigan, which is a bulwark of unionism, and Indiana, with the enactment of right-to-work laws. But the next one is just income inequality. It's the biggest, it's the largest gap we've known. Fourth is the wars and the occupations. We go from one to the next to the next. Iraq paid a terrible price, and the Iraqi people paid a unbelievable price in terms of people killed and refugees, and now Afghanistan, and still the stability that the U.S. said it sought for wars we considered unjust, imperialistic, and yet they occurred, and they are occurring, and now we're faced with the danger of wars in Syria and in Iraq. The budget that Jack mentioned at the outset is coming to a head. We've got the deficits and the debt, and in October, November, the issue of increasing the debt again is liable to bring things to a head, and not to the benefit of labor and the great majority. The Affordable Care Act, the Obama plan, is unraveling before our eyes. And one of the things, Jack, that's not publicized enough is that in all the major social programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, it wasn't a one-shot deal. There was an act originally passed, and they had to be amended, particularly Social Security, time after time after time. And now the projection is you can't get any amendments because the Republicans, to a person virtually, don't want to see any changes made because they feel it's so unpopular, which it is, that it'll be a powerful weapon for them to use in next year's congressional elections. So without a willingness to make changes and improvements of a law that's fundamentally flawed anyway because the insurance companies are perpetuated as being in the center of things. And labor's turned against it, at least several unions, because it obstructs and interferes with their Taft-Hartley plans and for other reasons. And employers are screaming. All sides are unhappy. And so that's a big issue for all the working people. So as a result of all this, the labor movement, which has been taking a beating in the strikes and in the rights of employees and on the economic and social issues, and faces cuts now, the danger in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, with the president calling for cuts in Social Security, changing the COLA formula, and Medicare, and all these big problems. And the reason that the conference was called in Rutgers was to take into consideration all of this and to focus on fight back. And by fight back, we mean unity of the labor movement with its community allies. We mean solidarity, and we mean mobilization in the streets. This situation begged for national mobilization, even some of the issues by themselves, like jobs. And yet the call has never come down, which is very unfortunate. So we're a group that, well, there were 100 people at the conference, mostly almost all trade unionists. We had vice presidents of two international unions. We had heads of labor councils. We had local unions represented, many of them from different unions. It was just a great meeting. And it came out with a plan of action. I pretty much tried to outline it. We do want to do something around the memorial, the Martin Luther King 50th anniversary memorial commemoration of his the March on Washington and his I Have a Dream speech. We want to do everything we can to help the Chicago teachers. Want to do whatever we can on immigrant rights. The P.J. Rennell campaign of the farm workers. And our main projection, our main demand is no cuts to the safety net programs. So we have a lot on our plate, and we want to grow the Labor Fight Back Network and like it to become national. And I just want to tell your listeners that if any of them are interested in more information, they can go to our website. It's laborfightback.org/conference. laborfightback.org/conference.
Well, thanks for that excellent introduction of the conference itself, and we'll talk shortly here about the Fight Back Network that's attempting to flow out of this conference. Okay, let me just add a few comments here, particularly for those folks who are members of unions. You made some reference here to Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, that goes into effect in less than a year here, in large part, some of it already in effect, but which is, quote, unraveling in in several dimensions. Most union folks probably aren't aware that it will mean the beginning of the end of their own union health care plans, union negotiated employer health care plans. Why? Because projections are the premiums for these plans are going to rise 30% over the next few years, then fully by 2018. Well, how can that happen? Well, because in the plan, Obama and the Obamacare plan will levy a 40% penalty on the employers if they don't cut the coverage and availability of these plans to their employees. So what the employers will do starting next year is to reduce the coverage, and over the next several years they will raise the cost as they reduce the coverage to make these plans untenable. We're going to see a period of very difficult. We thought it was difficult union bargaining to maintain this health care benefits and these union negotiated plans up to now. You ain't seen nothing yet. You're going to see an extremely difficult situation for unions trying to maintain coverage for their workers under these plans. Both the employers and Obama administration and the politicians want these plans to end. They want to get rid of them. It's the beginning of the end of employer-provided health care, and that's all in the Obama. It's called the Cadillac plans, you know, decent plans. Nothing Cadillac about them. They're really Chevrolets, you know, basic what people really need in health care coverage. But they call them Cadillac to make them sound as if they are really generous. Of course, they are generous compared to going out and buying your own coverage. But the whole idea is rationing health care. You see, that's really what Obamacare is about. No cost controls plus rationing health care, which means it's in the same tradition as George W. Bush's health savings accounts, privatize and ration health care, and Bill Clinton's health maintenance organizations, which were about rationing health care to reduce the cost. Obamacare is in the tradition of Clinton Care and George Bush health savings accounts. It's just the next latest step of this, folks, and it's going to devastate union health care provisions and plans over the next 4 years. And it's just the process is just beginning. Okay, I just had to say that, and I will also add that in my show next week, folks, we're going to see, I'm going to explain to you how the cuts in Obama's budget, 2014 budget, will really mean $1 trillion in deficit cutting for Medicare and Social Security. They already admit $630 billion, but I'll explain to you how this thing, once the deal is made, is going to mean $1 trillion cuts in just Social Security and Medicare. So the war goes on, the war at home, the economic war, the class economic war at home. And that's where labor fight back comes into play. That's so critical. The unions and union members, if their union leaders won't do it, the union members must stand up and construct a nationwide fight back network. What do you have to say to that, Jerry?
Well, I second the motion in all respects, Jack. I think you fit the nail on the head. I would just add to it the political dimension. Many people have had the concept that the Republicans are the bad guys. They represent the corporations, and the Democrats represent us. They represent labor. They represent working people. And this illusion is being shattered. And as you point out, here we have Obama campaigning for a bill that will end up cutting benefits. That's the intent of the so-called Cadillac plan. Now, we in the Labor Fightback Network, we have no brief for the Republicans because everywhere they are damned for being the party of the millionaires and billionaires is true. But they are only one of the parties that's beholden to corporate interests, and the other is the Democrats. And so much of what goes on these days is justified with the rationale, well, it could be worse. And it's deplorable that we have our political futures, our social futures, economic futures, governed by this concept that we gotta get lesser evils. We're used to thinking of lesser evils when it comes to candidates running for office. So the Democrat isn't good, but he's or she is a lesser evil. But it's not just lesser evil candidates, it's lesser evil programs. And you can always find something worse than what Obama is proposing. I mean, for example, he's less ready to get into Syria, less ready to rush and start bombing Iran. But on the other hand, he tripled the troops in Afghanistan, and he's shot more drones than Bush, and he's deported 400,000 people in 1 year, immigrants. It could be worse, but it's plenty bad the way it is. So we have to think in terms of alternative politics, or else we're going down the tube. And by alternative politics, I mean running people from our own unions in alliance with our community supporters.
Running for office, you mean?
Go ahead.
Running for office, you mean? When you say running, you mean talking about candidates running for political office?
Exactly.
Okay, right. Yeah, well, let me just comment on the defense side of this. Those reading the press lately, looks like things are moving towards a precipice in Syria once more. And as I'll explain next week when we look at the defense budget, Obama's just moving the money around, you see. He's moving the money that was being spent on overseas contingency operations, i.e. direct war spending in Afghanistan and Iraq, and he's moving it elsewhere. Where is he moving it? Well, he's moving it to Western Pacific, to the Navy and the Air Force. The Army had their war in the Middle East, and now it's the Navy and the Air Force turn to ramp up their equipment spending. And this situation in Syria is getting very serious, folks. Marching towards the precipice. The European Union just voted to give arms to the rebels. Russia's response was, okay, we're going to give surface-to-air missiles to Assad. Well, that means things are getting a little hotter over there. And Israel says, well, Russia, if you give missiles to Assad, we're going to attack your ships delivering them. Well, the EU would not be making that decision to okay sales to the rebels in Syria if they did not have the green light from Obama and the Americans. It's that simple, folks. They would not be doing it. So there's another fight brewing in Syria. And the never-ending defense spending over $1 trillion a year. By the way, the same amount, $1 trillion a year in total defense spending in the United States, and $1 trillion in cuts in Social Security and Medicare coming. You think the two numbers are simply coincidental? No, I don't think so. Anyway, I just had to have a say on that particular topic, Jerry. Jerry, what came out of the Labor Fight Back conference in terms of what next? What actions, what next?
All right. Let me just preface it by responding to the question you initially asked, who was there, how many, and what happened. excuse me. First of all, it's important to note that different organizations and individuals sent greetings to the conference. The Steelworkers Union, the Nurses, National Nurses United, the Chicago Teachers, whose president, Karen Lewis, spoke by videotape, and Senator Bernie Sanders. And that sort of set the tone. It showed that it was a broad-based conference, and it had a certain amount of authority and had a following, and there were a lot of interested people. We did tape the highlights, and the tapes will be available. We had also some outstanding talks Friday night and Saturday night. I won't go through the list of speakers and what each had to say, but they really turned the crowd on. They each had a meaningful message along the lines of fight back in solidarity and be uncompromising and draw a line in the sand, protect what we have and expand what we have. It really rang a bell. The workshops convened on and took up a number of issues, including the commemoration of the 50th anniversary. June 22nd, the UAW and NAACP are holding a rally in Detroit. In 1963, they had a rally. It turned out 125,000 people, and it was a build-up to the March on Washington, which followed a couple months later. But they're going to be out in the streets, the very thing that is needed, and it sets an example. So we're glad to see that alliance. A bunch of us will plan to be there. And then July 2nd, and this gets to what came out, the 48th anniversary of Medicare was actually July 30th, and that's when demonstrations were originally scheduled. But because of the congressional schedule, they moved it up. So there will be demonstrations, local rallies and marches to observe the occasion and to demand that there be no cuts. And
what this date will was that again, Jerry?
And that will be on July. The Labor Fight Back Conference became the Labor Fight Back Network, and 20 signed up to be on the steering committee. So we have now a governing body, and we have met, and we're adopted a mission statement, which I will be glad to send to. It's posted on our website. And again, I want to tell you that the website address is laborfightback.org/conference, and you will find the mission statement, because we want to underscore that we are looking for trade unionists at all levels, labor activists, workers' centers, community activists who align themselves with the working class. We want to see it grow around the country. Jack, we are the only, we don't trumpet ourselves. We're starting off, we have modest numbers, but we are the only formation that we know of with the kind of program that we're talking about here, with the emphasis on national mobilizations and a much heightened sense of solidarity and a clear program of no cuts, and with events and meetings and gatherings and demonstrations on our calendar. We hope that others who feel that we're at a turning point for the labor movement, if it's going to survive, we lost 400,000 members last year, if it's going to survive, it's going to have to make a turn. And the AFL-CIO convention in January in Los Angeles is going to have to cope with the challenges, and we are hoping that the unions step up to the plate with their delegates, and that the AFL-CIO as a whole does the same. We want to see the labor movement unite. We want to see it be more militant, more robust, more ready to do battle, and not allow another Wisconsin or another Michigan, get rid of the right-to-work laws, get rid of Taft-Hartley, go on the offensive, not only defend and protect Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, but make sure they get expanded and educate the public about the availability of unlimited amounts of money that could be used for social programs, but instead austerity measures are being adopted, like the sequestration, and the burdens placed on lower and middle income people, poor people. So we have a class war going on in this country, but it's a one-sided class war. And unless people step forward, it's just going to get worse.
I want you to think, while we take a break here, about the question as follows, Jerry, and we'll pick it up when we get back. But The question is, it appears that the very senior leadership, the FLCL, just wants to talk and doesn't want to get into the streets, which I agree with you has to happen if anything's gonna change. They don't want to embarrass their Democratic Party friends. If this is the case, what does the Labor Fight Back Network do? Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll pick up with that question with Jerry after a short break. This is Alternative Visions. Your host, Jack Rasmus. Be back in a minute.
Sometimes tomorrow comes soaked in treasure and blood. Here we stood the job. Now we'll stand the flood. There's a new world coming. I can see the light. I'm a jack of all trades.
This is Jack Rasmus, your host, Alternative Visions. My guest is Jerry Gordon. We're talking about the recent Labor Fight Back Conference and Labor Fight Back Network that's in construction as we talk here. In building, and my question to Jerry was, I totally agree with him, no change is coming unless labor and community folks and everybody who is being hammered by these policies that exist in the United States and are only going to get worse, unless they get out into the streets and start demonstrating, either in August at the Martin Luther King, August 1963, March. We'll see whether that becomes anything but a talk fest in Detroit, as Jerry mentioned, etc. Jerry, the question I left for you, for our listeners, was what if the AFL-CIO has continued only to talk the talk and not do any walking, i.e. don't act, continue to hold their members in tight control and not release the power of unions and workers into the streets here? My guess is we're just going to see more talk the talk because, once again, they're rolling the dice on the midterm elections coming up in 2014, and Trump and other leaders do not want to embarrass their Democratic Party friends. They want a few more crumbs, NLRB appointments, and so forth, and they'll continue to sit tight. What does that mean for the Labor Fight Back Network?
Well, what it means is our job is challenging and daunting. We're not the labor movement. We can't substitute ourselves for the big union coalitions, AFL-CIO, or Change to Win. But what we can do is conduct a very active educational campaign coupled with some resolutions that we hope unions will adopt that will call for labor to mobilize nationally and to examine its political posture. Candidates that it supports so frequently betray us. Get over the idea that the Democratic Party is a labor party or a workers' party. You know, Jack, the worst, most repressive labor law in memory, the Taft-Hartley Act, passed in 1947, a majority of Democrats in Congress voted in favor of it. A majority, and keep in mind that Truman vetoed it, and it took a two-thirds vote. So it was a coalition of Democrats and Republicans that provided the two-thirds vote. And this is this contained the right to work law so that unions, where a state decides to bar unions from negotiating contracts where all members that are represented either are members of the union or pay them dues commensurate, and that's outlawed now. It's passed in Michigan and Indiana, 24 states. And this, in each state, it's outlawed. So you can't even do that. So you have free riders, workers that collect them, that get the benefits and the higher wages that the union negotiates and the job protection, but don't contribute. It's divisive. So I'm just citing that as one of many examples. The Democratic Party won in the 2008 election. They had the presidency, both houses of Congress. And they didn't even get through an Employee Free Choice Act, which would have allowed organizing by virtue of cards being signed by a majority without going to elections, which are rigged in many cases because the employers scare the hell out of the workers and threaten to shut down a facility and move it, and so on. And just trample, our rights are being trampled on. So we didn't get anything from the Democratic administration on that or on anything else, on labor reform, restore the right to strike, which has been undermined severely. So you're asking, what do we do if the AFL-CIO doesn't change its ways, and what can the Labor Fight Back Network do? Well, what we're trying to do is get unions, as I say, to take positions, step up to the plate, take positions that are brought for before the AFL-CIO convention.
And it's local
one
unions.
Thing that, that
right, local unions are referring to
local
here.
Local unions, yeah. state organizations, regional ones, international, at all levels. What the labor movement needs immediately, more than anything else, is a debate. We need to have people who get up there and say, we got to change our ways. Hell, in the 1930s, the AFL only wanted to maintain skilled workers in the workforce. They didn't want anything to do with the unskilled workers. So it took a upsurge from below, and actually they went off, as you know, and started a new, a different organization, the CIO. It's got to be a willingness to stand up to the employers and do whatever's necessary to wage the battle and not have this one-sided war. So, Jack, we're trying our best to develop consciousness on the need for action and for rebellion and for changing, and we'll have to see. But events are conspiring to force some changes willy-nilly, because I think there's a general recognition in the labor movement, leave our role aside, that we just can't continue the way we're going now. I mean, you ask any trade unionist who thinks seriously about these things, and they'll shake their head and they say, something's needed. Something's needed. So we are projecting, building our network to provide answers to that question.
Yes, I would add the addendum that you mentioned yourself, that labor unions lost 400,000 jobs last year, and that was at a time when we had, over the last several years, a creation of 5 million jobs, and they still lost 400,000 members. Now, you know, for listeners, you should be clear that 5 million jobs just about offset the 5 million who were so discouraged they've left the labor force altogether. So we've been churning jobs. We're not losing more jobs, but we're not gaining any jobs. And the jobs that are being created are part-time temp jobs, very low-paid jobs, and the jobs we're losing are the high-paid jobs. So we're churning out high-paid for low-paid, and, of course, weekly earnings are declining steadily as a result every month. But 400,000 jobs, when we're supposed to have a job recovery going, I mean, I could understand 400,000 if we were in a deep recession, but during a so-called jobs recovery, that ought to really put the warning flags up for organized labor here that, you know, you continue at that rate, you're going to have 3% of the labor force by the end of the decade, not your paltry 6.9% of the labor force unionized. But yet, you see, Jerry, we still see that these guys are up there are just talking. You know, they're talking about the problem, but they won't step out and do something about the problem.
Well, Jack, you know, we have to have confidence in the working class. It's easy to get discouraged. I'm not suggesting you are. I think you're just pointing up the problem. But we have to have a fighting approach, confidence in the working class. It moves in spurts. It's passive, sometimes for decades, and then things break. And so we have to keep plugging, but it's a fight that can and must be won. With all of the setbacks and defeats, the labor movement hasn't been emasculated. It still exists. It still has about 14 million members. it still has the capability and the power once it uses that power. And so let me give you an example of success where the power was used, and that was the referendum in Ohio, where I live, in 2011. There the corporations, the right wing, managed to put on the ballot. Well, they passed the law destroying public workers' bargaining rights. And so the labor movement in Ohio collected over 1 million signatures to put the issue on the ballot to rescind that law. And the AFL-CIO poured in millions of dollars into this fight. And their staff members were told, "For when you're taking a vacation, you should go to Ohio." And there were a lot of people in the outside who helped, but they were no substitute for the people on the inside. I mean, I saw it. I was there. I attended the meetings. And you found rank-and-file workers mobilized. And so there was a tremendous victory, the biggest defeat of a series of referendums in Ohio history, nothing like it. I think it was 63% to 37% to get rid of these shackles placed on public employees. Now, why is it that there was so much support and solidarity for this fight that there wasn't for others? It's because of the thing I said about conditions conspire to make changes. You didn't get this in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, what you got was get off the streets and support a Democrat for governor and get rid of Walker that way. And the guy they supported was anti-labor. And he said if he's elected, he'll keep in place all the takebacks that Walker had tried to negotiate with the union. So that was Wisconsin. But in Ohio, it was different. Why? Because of survival. That's the thing that motivates, survival. And if you get more of these survival struggles, you will get mobilization. And so things, excuse me, things are approaching such a crisis that any labor leader that wants to keep her or his job is going to have to be more responsive, or they're going to have to take responsibility for more of these massive defeats.
Well, it sounds your point's well taken, and it makes the importance of building a labor fight back network around the country at the local union and community level so much more important. So when the next eruption occurs, be it in Ohio or Wisconsin, that it does not get diverted by politicians as it did in Wisconsin, and that it gets directed towards some real meaningful change, all the more important for this kind of network. I agree with you. At the local level, at the community level. So if any of you out there are listening to this at the local level, in your union or in your community organization or student organization, do go to the website and look at the program, the Labor Fight Back Network program and its mission statement. Again, that's Labor Fight Back .org. Is that correct, Jerry? LaborFightBack.org?
It's
the website?
Yeah. LaborFightBack.org/conference.
Okay. And if they want to, if you have a union activist out there that wants to get active in the organizing of the network, where would they send an email? Is it on the website?
Yes, it's all on the website, but they can send it to Labor Fight Back Conference at P.O. Box, Labor Fight Back Network at P.O. Box 187, P.O. Box 187, Flanders, New Jersey, 07836. And let me just make one other point, Jack. We are mainly a union formation, that's our name, Labor Fight Back, but we know that the labor movement can't go it alone. And on this, there's unity from top to bottom. There's been a whole change in culture and orientation at all levels. People in the labor movement know we need community allies. On our steering committee, we have some people who aren't trade unionists, but who are part of a progressive movement of which labor must play leadership roles, the group that's got the 14 million members. But we value those that may be listening. If you are in some kind of community organization, join us. We're building something historic, a new formation that has a great vision. Read our mission statement, and if you identify with it, it really touches all the issues, even though we prioritize not all of them, but a few for actions, because we're not a political party or the labor movement, but you will see that we have a good position on organizing the South and immigrant rights and education against privatization, support of public schools, on war and peace. We're firmly against interventions and wars for profit and aggrandizement on all these things, on civil rights, civil liberties. We are a new formation that's got a vision and a program that deals with these. So we need people, and we need, if you're really interested, it's possible to be on the steering committee. So if you'll write us at the address I gave, or email, or visit our website, it's all there, and we would welcome you.
Tell me if I'm summarizing this correct, Jerry. The Labor Fight Back Network has a suggested program, a fight back program. It's attempting to link up people at the grassroots, local level, in unions and communities in preparation for the inevitable next explosion that's going to occur. It emphasizes solidarity among all different groupings here. It's willing
it's Tuesday,
to push the AFL-CIO Change the Wind leadership if they're coming, but if they're not coming along, then it's going to work at the mid and local levels to put pressure on them to eventually come along. In other words, it's not just attempting to influence top labor leaders. It's going to create something that, or try to help create something that's real and put pressure on them to follow. If they will, if they don't, then hell with them.
Yes,
is that correct? Am I off base on that?
No, I'm sure you're not, Jack. And let me just tell you about an experience in 2010 where the job situation was really of crisis proportions, as it is now, but it was on the front burner. So the AFL-CIO had not called a national mobilization, but 1199, a 300,000 member SEIU, Service Employees Union, in New York, joined forces with the NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. They joined forces to call a national march on Washington. And the call resonated, and many unions came on board. And so you had people like Harry Belafonte, who spoke, and many people in the left progressive movement. So AFL-CIO came around to endorsing it belatedly, but they did endorse it. And we had, I guess, 150,000 people out in Washington. So sometimes things happen that you hope for, and it does crystallize. That's an example. There's not enough examples like that, but that shows you what can be done, as does the Ohio experience on the referendum.
There's going to be a 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's March on Washington in 1963. It's going to happen this August in Washington. What's the Labor Fight Back Network's orientation towards that?
Well, at our conference, our orientation was to go all out and build it. We saw the potential for a demonstration of even a million people. That's not being unrealistic when you consider the 50 million people on Social Security, an equal number or so on Medicare, Medicaid, I mean, imagine full-page ads in papers around the country. Don't let them cut your benefits. March on Washington, August 24th. What's happened is, in the aftermath of Rutgers, there's been some internal problems as to what the plan is for the action. It's co-sponsored by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the King Center. And I really can't comment further because it's something those groups, the civil rights movement, has to settle. But at this juncture, it's not settled. So we're hoping everything will come together. But we do know this, that even if it doesn't turn out the way we had hoped, that there's going to be an awful lot happening on and around August 24th, both because of King's stature, because of the things he fought for and that he died for, and not only because he was killed while assisting an organizing drive conducted by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees in Nashville, and that's where he was killed. And so, but not only for all these reasons, but because this presents an opportunity for labor to demonstrate its anger at the conditions, and make its demands with banners and signs and literature and speakers. We'd like to see it come together as a joining of forces of labor and the civil rights movement and the other traditional allies, as well as the beneficiaries of the federal programs. We don't consider these gifts by anybody. People, they're earned benefits. People spent a lifetime working for it to get them, and nobody has a right to take it from them. So that was the hope, and if it doesn't work out along the lines that we hoped for, then there'll be other actions, as example, the one in Detroit on June 22nd. So people are going to commemorate this anniversary one way or the other. There's a lot of ferment out there. There's a restive workforce, and we're going to see some things happening in the next month, I think, to counter the assaults and the attacks that we have seemed to become conditioned to without really fighting back the way we need to.
Well, we have 2.5 months here before August. We'll see how the thing works out. But from afar, it looks a little bit like in prior to the 1963 March, when you had all the official civil rights groups feuding at the top among their leadership, and it wasn't until the students said, okay, we're going to ride these freedom buses throughout the South, that action really broke the whole thing wide open and pushed the civil rights movement to a new level.
Well, you're right, and there's another thing in 1963, and that was Martin Luther King. I mean, he was a unifying figure. He was at the helm, and so you could build it. You don't like to build something around one man. I'm not suggesting that, but on the other hand, leadership is not something to be underestimated either. And he was such a powerful force and spokesperson that it could not be denied. Kennedy called, as you know, Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders to the White House, A. Philip Randolph from Labor, and he urged them to call the march off, because that shows you how nervous these top politicians get when people get out in the streets. But they said, no way. And so they went forward and they held their march. And it was attended by 250,000 people. So, yes, you're right, Jack, it's possible, but time is short now. It's unfortunate we've lost a lot of time. We hope it can be made up. We hope that whatever differences exist can be reconciled, and that the labor movement will get on board full board. So we'll have to see, and we're waiting like others are waiting to see. But in the meanwhile, we're talking about Plan B, which is rallies, demonstrations, town meetings, symposiums, a whole variety of activities and programs where you have a discussion and a debate on which way forward for the labor movement and its allies.
Well, maybe the Labor Fight Back Network, in combination with some progressive local unions and community groups in various parts of the country could identify half a dozen cities and have their own August marches in those cities, and from that maybe have some local conferences and teach-ins to attempt to identify what next. Because as I predicted at the beginning here, it's going to hit the fan later in the year. Once this tax code thing goes through, then you're going to see some big wheeling dealing and some big cuts to spending programs and so forth that they're going to have to use to cover the cost of more tax cuts for corporations. So things will lighten, or not lighten up, but will light up
yes,
towards the end of the year.
In addition, we have put forward the idea, wouldn't it be great if the unions got together and organized independently an action in Washington on August 24th, not to compete with the other action, which may be low-key, we don't know, but we have every right to have our own action because of King's dedication and commitment to the labor movement, and we have to be independent, and if one thing doesn't work, you try something else. And then we've talked about bringing out a huge number of workers and then maybe marching if they have another meeting, which is not mass action-oriented, but to commemorate King. So the time doesn't conflict. So that's another possibility. There's all kind of possibilities being talked about.
Okay, so listeners, we want one more time before the show ends here. If you're interested in joining with the Labor Fight Back National Network, laborfightback.org/conference. You can see the mission statement. You can see the suggested program. There's emails. You can connect there. Or you can write to Labor Fight Back, P.O. Box 187, Flanders, New Jersey, 07836. Once again, get your pencil, Labor Fight Back, P.O. Box 187, Flanders, New Jersey, 07836. Get off your duff. Do something. It's, you know, we've been talking about this crisis and causes and where it's going for years now. It's time to do something because the time is running out. Stop complaining, get out there, and do something. Join the Labor Fight Back Network. Find out more about it, especially if you're a local union or community leader. This is the place to be. This is the real thing. It's the only thing of its nature really out there, so we want to urge you all to once again join and do something. Jerry, thanks again for coming on and telling us about the network, and we hope to have you back later in the summer and give us another report on what's happening.
Okay,
this is Alternative Visions, Jack Rasmus.